Hello, my name is Sarah, and I am your chakra coach. On this podcast, we'll be exploring how the chakra system can help guide you to grow your emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual wellness, leading you closer to your highest self. Hello, welcome to the show. I am so glad you're here. Today, I've got the first in a new series I'm working on about spiritual practices that don't always seem like spiritual practices. Every few weeks, I'll share on a topic that can expand what we think of as spiritual practices, because, as the saying goes, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. If that's true, then everything we do is part of our spiritual development. I've been thinking about that a lot and how we tend to separate it from our regular lives. Like, I meditate in the morning, that's my spiritual growth, and then I don't think about it the rest of the day. I don't know that there's anything wrong with that, but I've been wondering how we expand on that idea to see if everything that we do can be a part of our journey in an intentional way. So that's the curiosity that is bringing you this new periodic series. And first up, we'll start with sexual healing as a spiritual practice. It's a conversation I had with sex therapist Heather Shannon, where we explore the idea that our sexual beings aren't just linked to the sacral chakra or even the heart chakra, that our entire energy system is affected by our sexual health. Heather Shannon is a certified sex therapist, and she is the host of the chart-topping Ask a Sex Therapist podcast. In her 12 years of private practice, Heather has helped hundreds of clients from all over the country to get rid of shame and stigma around sex so they can discover more pleasure and embrace their true sexual selves. And as we know, shame and stigma around anything inhibits our spiritual growth. Heather has appeared in Hustler Magazine, Self Magazine, Mind Body Green, and on podcasts such as The Horny Housewife and The Multi-Orgasmic Millionaire. Now, we didn't get a chance to talk about this in the episode, but I wanted to let you know that she's offering a new 3-month holistic coaching program called Intimacy Infusion that looks at 4 layers of intimacy. This is for people with attachment issues and problems related to sexual desire. People who, despite going to counseling and trying to just push past it, at the end of the day, they can't seem to get over past hurts and traumas and are still feeling stuck in their sexual relationships. Intimacy Infusion helps them become confident in themselves and their attractiveness, have a vibrant and strong relationship where they can talk about intimacy and enjoy a sex life with fire and passion. There's more about her on her website, heathershannon.co. And of course, I'll link to that in the show notes, as well as to my own website and to my social media. So look at those if you want to know more about either of us. For now, enjoy this conversation on sexual healing as a spiritual practice.
Hi, Heather. Welcome to Your Chakra Coach, the podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm very excited to be here. And
I am very excited to have you. This interview took some doing, and so I love it when a plan comes together.
Same.
Today, everybody listening, we are talking about sexual wellness.
Woohoo!
I think it is a topic that goes underreported in our society, and let's report on it. Let's see what's what. Now, of course, we are going to look at it through a chakra lens.
Yep.
But this is Heather Shannon. And like I said in her intro, she is a certified sex therapist. So I figured who better than somebody to come in and talk us through all of this. Heather.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Let's get into it, Sarah. I'm ready.
Let's get into it. Let's just go ahead and be, well, you won't be, but let's go ahead and I'll be uncomfortable and everybody listening can be uncomfortable and okay. And you'll help us through it and we'll be fine. It's going to be fine.
I commit to helping you all through it.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Thanks.
I wanted to start with what I'm thinking of as sex and the spiritual path. Mm. We always think of sex as being a base need, a primal need,
mm-hmm.
but from our previous conversations and just some of the work of yours that I've looked at, your belief is that sex is more than that. And I think we sometimes pay lip service to it being an emotional thing and a mental thing, but I want to really dig deep on that with you. Why? Mm-hmm. Why do we need sexual wellness and sexual health for our expanded consciousness?
Yeah, that's a great question.
No, I just wanted to start with like something that. Easy and small.
This is honestly what I love about podcast hosts, though, is like we just like love to get deep with all the topics and
just go
right in there. So yeah, I mean, part of what made me decide to become a sex therapist was realizing how important sexuality was to mental health and to our sense of identity. That so many of us have been through trauma related to sexuality, that so many of us have been conditioned by government, school, family, religion to feel shame or discomfort around sex. And when you look at kind of all that energy that is there, that's sort of like repressive or pressuring or mixed messages. And then you also look at, we were literally created from sex, you know,
right?
Some people identify as asexual. It's still a pretty small part of the population. So the vast majority of people are also identify as being sexual creatures. So it's kind of like, we're just these like inherently sexual creatures. We were born from sex, but we're like deeply uncomfortable. And it's like, that seems like something that needs help in society. So like, that's why I think it's important. And, you know, I'm curious from your end on like the chakras it would relate to, but I do think there's kind of that very like grounded, fundamental, sexual, maybe like base urge thing. But then I also think there's this opportunity to transcend and to, you know, have these moments where we're just so present and kind of in the zone and letting go of all of the thoughts and distractions and all of that, that can be really connective and really spiritual.
I do think that's true. And I think that we don't ever really consider that as part of it. The fact that yes, our sexual selves are frequently linked to the root and sacral chakra. And we tend mm-hmm. to think, oh, if I have an imbalance down low, because those are the material chakras that deal with, you know, the actual physical being on the planet.
Yeah.
That if I not engaging in the kind of sex that I want to have, or I'm not having the experience, and I don't just mean the physical experience mm-hmm. when I engage in it, like that could definitely be more of course, a heart chakra. If we're mm-hmm. not feeling mm-hmm. Love, or if we're not feeling loving or loved, mm-hmm. but I think from what you're saying is that we also are looking at the crown chakra, which is mm-hmm. our sort of portal to feeling a connectedness and
yeah,
maybe in an ideal world, a sexual experience, or at least an ideal sexual experience for some people, would be the loss of that sense of separation between mm-hmm. the two beings in the moment. And that, you know, that our crown chakra is the portal to all of right. to that experience.
Right. It's interesting. Like, as you were talking about that, I also realized, I think part of why I'm so drawn to this work is that it's actually all the chakras, like yes. all the chakras are involved in sexuality in terms of like being in your body and being really present in your body and not just sort of like up in the air in your head and your thoughts. And then also like being in touch with our creative and sexual energy, feeling really empowered as an individual to, you know what we want and to be able to manifest. The heart chakra, which you mentioned, the throat, I think, is one that I work with a lot, because so many people feel stuck in expressing what they want sexually and just kind of like owning it, even sometimes to ourselves. Like sometimes we have things we're interested in sexually that we're uncomfortable with. So, you know, so to become comfortable and to be able to express and to create something with someone. And then absolutely, I think, you know, third eye intuition can be involved with like, what if we're not censoring ourselves? What if we're not kind of doing this, like, oh, I should be doing this way, or let me just think about blah, 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 and just sort of like going with where we're drawn intuitively in a sexual experience. And then the spiritual part, like you said, like, you know, we're all kind of one. And what if some of that illusion drops away and we feel really connected? I don't know. It's exciting.
It's a whole body experience. And yeah. I do think that we're encouraged societally to compartmentalize it, to make it one small, tiny little thing that is separate from the rest of our existence.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, and now that I'm like putting words to it, it's making me sad too, because I absolutely can see how that was my conditioning, and honestly still is. In that vein, I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, which is shame and mixed messages.
Yeah.
Let's start with shame. There is an enormous amount of shame mixed up in sex. Not for everybody, I know, but I think for a lot of people.
I'd say most.
Yeah. Would you say, I mean, would you say that in your experience?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I'm 100% shame free. And like, you know, this is my job.
Right.
Yeah. So, have I done a lot of work on it? Yes. I mean, maybe a little further along than some. Yes. But like, yeah, I don't think I'm 100% rid of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But that's good, right? That normalizes it, right?
Yeah.
It means that we don't have to feel isolated. We don't have to, we can realize we're not the only people feeling that. Where does that shame come from? I know we can just sort of broadly say, oh, culturally, but let's talk about it. Where does that shame come from?
I'm trying to think about, you know, messages I got even growing up. And I think some of it is being able to talk about it freely. Like when we're not able to talk about sex freely, there's kind of this sense of like, oh, you're not supposed to talk about that. Like, oh, I gotta kind of gotta like clam up. Like, that's just to keep to myself, because if I say something about it. Or even growing up in my house, I don't think I knew the word vagina until I was maybe 8 or 9, you know? And so it was kind of like, oh, those are just private parts. Kind of like, we don't talk about that. So there was kind
we
of
have
this...
all of these euphemisms that we use.
So I think there's like an indirect message through the euphemisms.
And anytime that we're asked not to talk about something, when we put that secrecy around it, it pushes it into the shadows, right? We put a little curtain around it. We don't let any light in on it.
Yeah.
And the thing about secrets is they do lead some almost directly to shame, because a secret means that there's something wrong with it, that we can't share it.
Right.
And I suppose not every single secret is like that, but these big secrets, these big societal secrets, do create shame. And I think that we're encouraged not to be interested in bodily sensations, right? Mm-hmm. Our bodies should be ignored at best and, you know, given minimal care. I think there's a lot of Victorian sort of like sensibilities around
that. Yes, let's be
that.
Prim and proper.
Prim and proper, and we just won't discuss any sort of normal bodily function, and so then we become ashamed of them.
Right.
And when we aren't allowed to talk about sex, then we don't have the skills to talk about it with a partner when the time comes.
I think that's a great point. And I know this might sound weird, but I think it can kind of start in families in some ways, you know, and our culture still is kind of like, ew, I can't think of my parents being sexual, you know, I gotta block my kids from sex because sex will corrupt them. And we can't have any of those discussions until they're like maybe in high school. And it's kind of like even discussions about bodies, about sex, it's like we just kind of have this fear and avoidance. And I think we're actually doing more harm by not talking about it. So that's my perspective.
I think that's true. Energetically, when we are encouraged to ignore our bodies and not discuss our bodies, then a lot of the energy that would be in our bodies to help us feel those sensations and process those sensations and understand them, when is it appropriate to allow a sexual urge? When is it appropriate to kind of pull away from the sexual urge? Because I do think there are times when it is.
Agree.
But we don't have the capacity to then stay energetically in our bodies when the time comes and we want to. It's a skill that we just simply don't have.
Yeah, what you're saying reminds me of something I've learned through working with clients on libido issues in particular, where there's kind of this emotional compartmentalizing and people just think like, oh, I'm just going to like not look at this like really sad part of my life, or these, let's just put those feelings in a box and like lock the key. It just doesn't work. And what I find is people wind up inadvertently shutting down their own sex drive because they're trying to block energy, really. Actually, this is a really fun topic to talk to you about, because I do think so much about sexuality is energy based.
So when we try to, like you were saying, we have anger or we have sadness or something,
yeah,
and we lock it down. We're like, I don't want to deal with that. I'll put it in a box and put it away. I just want to be love and light.
Right.
We're inadvertently also shutting down our ability to feel that kind of sexual pleasure, sexual joy.
Yeah.
Because it isn't like a, you can't pick and choose what you shut down. You kind of like dampen it all, or you learn to manage it all, right? And you don't have to be this big emotional basket that expresses every single thing, right? But without the ability to sort of work with them. Is that kind of what you mean?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating kind of how well you understand it, given you're not a sex therapist, but I think because you work with energy, you totally get it. And that's exactly what I see with my clients, and they do it in different ways where it's like, oh, I don't want to look at this. I don't want to feel that, you know, I'm just going to focus on what's positive. And I get the temptation of that. I sometimes do that as well, but so much of sexual healing, I think, is embracing our shadow side and is allowing whatever energy is there to be there and to build and to trust in our capacity to handle that energy.
Handling the energy. That is exactly what I was trying to say, is how do you handle the energy when it comes? Mixed messages. I do know that's something that a lot of us have been through. You mentioned earlier trauma around sexuality, and we're told so often, you know, be ashamed, don't do sex, don't have sex thoughts, right? Like all of those things.
Which is like saying, don't be a human.
Right. Please stop having a body. Mm-hmm. But then at a certain point, we are expected, and whether that's through like a marriage or a long-term partner, or even just a random person off the street, doesn't matter.
Right.
But you are expected to somehow flip a little switch from being not talking, ignoring all of that, completely compartmentalizing it, to then somehow knowing exactly what you're supposed to do in the moment
and
being really excited about it. And I think people struggle with that and have enormous amounts of difficulty releasing that and turning the light switch on and off all the time.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like the way you're presenting that. I think of it with men a lot too, where it's like they're, you know, just supposed to be sexual all the time, and they're not supposed to have an emotional need that goes with sex, and they're not, you know, they're also not supposed to be too emotional in general. And it's like, that's a blockage of energy flow too, that can impact intimacy. So, but you're right. It applies to everyone regardless of gender.
That's so true. As somebody who identifies as a woman, I think I tend to always think about, and this podcast largely has a female listenership, not entirely, but largely. And so I do tend to think about it from that sort of framework, but no, you're right. Like, we're constantly, as women, said no body, all emotions, and men can be told all body, no emotions. And then we're supposed to somehow meet in the middle in a heterosexual relationship and be like, and now we fit.
Right, which is like insane when you say it out loud, right?
No, it sounds completely bonkers.
Yeah, because it is.
But it also wouldn't work in a relationship that's a non-traditional heterosexual relationship, right?
Because everyone's still socialized by gender these days. You know, we haven't really gotten away from that.
That's right. And I do think that's getting a little bit better very slowly. But, you know, if we have two women, it's all emotions and no sex. Well, that's not right either. Right?
It's like not.
Men would be like, all sex, no emotional connection. That's not what some people want either. Oh my gosh. We're such a mess, Heather. It is astounding that the species continues.
It really is. I was listening to another podcast that I like called Love You with Evan Mark Katz, and he had an episode on gender roles. And actually, he shared some research findings that were really interesting to me. And so one of them was actually saying, I think it's like women in hetero relationships are like the least satisfied of all. Gay men were the most satisfied. I think lesbian women were next. And then I don't know where like men in straight presenting relationships showed up, but basically it was really interesting. And I think part of what he was exploring that I agree with is when there's fewer assumptions in terms of the gender roles, it tends to be better for us, you know?
How do we even go about releasing our assumptions?
I think step one is become aware of them. So, I mean, even just people listening as we're talking about this stuff, they're like, oh, yeah, maybe I do this, or maybe I do fall into this pattern. So just to start to realize our patterns.
So awareness,
and then not judge them.
Okay, that's two full steps. That is
step one.
Two full steps, because it we really talk is. A lot about becoming aware of yourself. Self-understanding mm-hmm. is the first step to almost any form of healing. That's sexual healing, emotional healing. I mean, honestly, like even physical healing, like you really should be aware that you
very much
have a problem, and then you can start to solve it. But non-judgment seems extremely important in this case. How do you help people who live in sort of a realm of self-judgment?
I'm going to say it's hard. So I have a lot of clients, yeah, everyone's different, but I have a lot of people that are pretty self-aware, which is great. So it's kind of like, okay, step one, check. But they're kind of like, yeah, a lot of good this self-awareness does me. And, you know, to be fully honest, I used to be in that camp where I'm like, yeah, I'm so stinking self-aware, but like, where am I getting? Nowhere. And, then realizing like, oh, it's judgment. So I think even just understanding judgment to me is a blocker of energy. Judgment is sort of like, you know, we have this awareness. It's almost like we're looking at something energetically, let's say, or like we're looking at our emotions, which like you can't see them. So you can think of it as energy or even physical sensations. But we can't fully see because judgment is a blocker, right? And so even just understanding that, like, oh, like my judgmental part thinks it's helping. Like it thinks it's helping me because it thinks it's going to like motivate me through the judgment. So to kind of realize like there's a positive intention there. So I can appreciate that, maybe have some compassion for that, but we do want to shift it because it is blocking. So then it's like, so one of the things I do when I work with clients is called internal family systems. And it's where we work with parts in sort of an energetic way. And so if you wanted to work with the judgment part, you would actually start by befriending it. You want to relate to the parts from a place of self energy, which is calm, compassionate, kind of gently curious. And then the part starts to relax a little bit, starts to kind of feel comfortable, and you can sense these parts. I'm actually now so interested how this connects with chakras. You can sense these parts in different areas of your body. So there's a lot of like when people feel anxiety, which is a big one that most of us experience somewhat regularly, you know, you might feel chest tightness or throat stuff. And so that's the two areas that I normally hear from people with anxiety. Or if you feel dread, you might feel like a pit in your stomach, you know? And so I think those are ones people might relate to. So I encourage people to kind of tune into your body, sense what's going on there with the emotion, and practice just feeling it. It's like, what if we just notice, what does judgment feel like in our body? And even as I say it, there's a sense of like constriction to me with judgment. And so people can kind of notice that, like, okay, what do I feel in my body? And a lot of us are so disconnected. I'm guessing your listeners are probably more connected than the average person to their body, but
we're all working on it.
Okay. Right. We're all working on it. Right. Sometimes I'm more connected than others. Sometimes we're like, well, I just know I'm having this emotion. And one of the questions I ask people is like, imagine an alien were dropped into your body. How would they know you're feeling angry or anxious or judgmental? You know, like what data would there be for them to know? And then I think it really causes us to be curious about our own body and how we're knowing even what emotion's there.
Yeah, I think the opposite of judgment is actually curiosity. It's not necessarily
agreed.
Non-judgment, it's curiosity. And the way I feel like sort of what you're saying of in that way is how we relate with a lot of things with the chakras of like feeling a sensation.
Yeah.
Is almost trying to put a name to that sensation. Not name the emotion, although you can, but like, oh, this feels like a sloshy bowl of soup. and Mega, right? Like that. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like I say do. That, and you're just like, oh, I actually do know exactly
yeah,
what a
visceral.
sloshy
I
bowl
love
of
that.
soup feels like
Yes,
in my stomach,
yes.
and that is how I feel,
Yeah.
right? And it's ridiculous to be like, well, I shouldn't have a sloshy bowl of soup in my stomach. Well, you don't. So why? How? There's no space for judgment because you've given it this sort of, it almost absurd sensation. Oh, I feel like there's a rock in my heart. Well,
Yeah.
there's not a rock in your heart. That's
Right.
not a physical reality.
Right.
It's not even an emotional reality. But that's the sensation. Let's talk about it. Then we take the opportunity for judgment away a little bit because there's a different way of viewing it, and that
100%.
I think that seems like a really important step to me, and
it is.
It also gives us the opportunity to not try to hide it. Like, oh, I'm feeling angry. Oh, I don't want to feel angry. I just won't feel angry. Right? Now, maybe we say, oh, there's a storm cloud roiling through my, you know, my pelvis. I'm just so, I you know, there feels like a storm.
Yeah.
Then we have a little bit more ability to say, ah, well, storms pass.
Right.
Right. And so there's an openness, a spaciousness, perhaps, when you get really curious about the sensation itself and not try to put a name to the emotion.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, yeah, I feel like we're very in sync today. Like, I use the word spaciousness a lot when I'm describing self energy. And I remember when I had a breakup years ago, and it was one of those things where I'm like, I know I need to end this, but I feel like I'm ripping my own heart out because I felt like I love this person, but we just didn't want the same things. And I kind of had this like almost like a voice come to me in the middle of the night, and it was like, God is spaciousness. And I was like, oh. So
tell
I really,
me more.
Yeah, I think spaciousness is very spiritual. And to me, it's almost like this, there's a non-attachment to it. And I think what we're talking about with, you know, judgment and letting go of it, it's like, there's just, when there's spaciousness, we're not gripping onto the judgment. And then the energy of the judgment can kind of move through us and ultimately change and pass and shift because we're not fighting it. I think of it as almost like a Chinese finger torture. You know, it's like when you're using force to try and like get your finger out of the judgment trap, you know, it doesn't work. You get stuck. And it's like, cause we're battling and we're losing a lot of energy battling. But when we really allow, and we, part of allowing, I think, is the taking the time, a sense of patience. And so when we're really patient and go slowly and allow, then we get our finger free. So that's how I explain it.
That's a great visual. Everybody knows exactly what that feels like. And it's just so claustrophobic.
It is. It is. Right. So we have that like emotional reactivity initially, like, oh, well, I'm being judgmental. That's bad. Or like, you know, I'm feeling shame. I don't want to feel that. That's bad. And it's like, there's all this labeling too. So I think the more we can get away from the labeling and be curious and be present, the more we'll just kind of notice and we'll learn and we'll observe and things will shift and we intuit the way forward too.
Isn't it interesting how we have all of these emotions and opinions about our emotions and our opinions?
It is.
We're like, I feel sad. I shouldn't feel sad. Oh, I shouldn't feel like I shouldn't feel sad. Well, now I'm sad that I shouldn't feel like I shouldn't feel like I'm sad. And that we, you know, we can really spin ourselves into just complete anxiety, vicious cycle, circular thinking.
It's
what
very
you were
true.
Saying earlier about befriending judgment. Is that partly because we feel the sense of judgment is, it's a safety mechanism. I feel like a lot of times we judge things because, well, if we have been safe to this point, not wanting this thing. Now that we want this thing, there's danger involved. Let's talk specifically about sex, like you were saying, wanting something, being interested in something, or a new partner, or trying to revamp a sex life with a long-term partner, any of those things. Like, there's a part of us that says, well, you're here, you're still alive, you're still kicking, and this is what kept us safe. And to change that means that we run the risk of being unsafe. So when we befriend our judgment, we say, thank you so much. I appreciate how much you are taking care of us. And
absolutely.
I could not think more highly of that impulse.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we do. So yeah, I feel like you're intuiting the internal family systems method, which happens with my clients sometimes too, and just reinforces the truth of it to me, because sometimes people wind up going to like the next steps without me guiding them. And I'm like, wow, that's fascinating. But yes, that's what it is. It's accepting and allowing and building a relationship between our self energy, which is the spaciousness, which is the acceptance, which is the curiosity, and the judgment part, and whatever other part, really. It's kind of like, it's all okay.
Anything else that shows up.
Right. Yeah. It's all okay. And so if someone's grappling with, you know, I don't know, I have this fetish, I'm really uncomfortable, and even like saying the word fetish makes me uncomfortable, and am I a sexual deviant, or like, you know, or is it like one of the more popular fantasies, according to Justin Lehmiller's book, Tell Me What You Want, where he did one of the largest research studies. It was the largest one at the time. I think it was like 4,000 people. I'm like, what are their fantasies? What are their desires? It was cuckolding. And I don't know if you're super familiar with that, but it's basically where it's typically a male, where he gets off on his female partner being with other men and kind of like degrading him. He's sort of like the inferior male. And so it's a surprisingly popular fetish or kink, but this is one where like people who have it are often so uncomfortable that they have it. And I do think there's a lot of opportunity there for like shadow work and acceptance and noticing like, where is this coming from? And is there a way to, you know, how real do you actually want to make this fantasy? Can it just, you know, exist in your mind? You know, if you want to make it real, like, you know, what work do we need to do to, you know, align all the chakras? It's like, there's a lot of chakras involved in that one.
That's right. And how do we keep everybody physically, emotionally, mentally safe?
Right.
While doing these things.
Right.
And a lot of that does feel like internal work, right? You got to get a lot
Absolutely.
Of things lined up in yourself before,
I mean, right.
Honestly, before asking anybody else to try to get into that mess.
100%. And I mean, I think that like, that's what's so fascinating to me about my work, because there's this aspect of like, oh, well, isn't that just kind of taboo and titillating? And I'm like, it could be. Yeah. But then also there's this like deep emotional work. And there's also like this self-acceptance piece and, you know, checking with the parts on an energetic level to notice like, where is this coming from? And, you know, what do we hope to get from this? And do we want to communicate this to somebody else? And, you know, can we be secure enough in ourselves that like, we're going to be able to communicate things like that, and regardless of how it goes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You've touched on a lot of different sort of like energy, like where we sit with that in the chakras. Can we talk about, like, I would love to know what the sort of top problems, I hate to call them problems, but I guess they kind of are, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the top things that you see in your clients and in people. And then let's talk about what they are.
Yeah.
Let's talk about which chakra might be imbalanced if we see those or we're experiencing these
cool.
those things. And then let's talk about like some strategies that we can use to help us overcome them in a healthy way that serves us, as opposed to just causing ourselves more trauma.
Okay. So on my podcast, Ask a Sex Therapist, my episode this past week, just a few days ago, was called All About Erections. And it was not just about erectile dysfunction, but largely in kind of addressing that. So that is a common one, you know, and what I see with that. So again, I think it's going to be multiple chakras. I feel like that's the pattern.
That's
what
fine.
What I see with that is there's a physical component and there's a psychological component. Some people who I see might be more on the physical side, some might be more on the psychological side. So physically, it can actually be a symptom of cardiovascular issues, because it's blood flow, right? That's, you know, creating the erection. And So when people reduce their inflammation, when they change their diet, all of a sudden they're having nighttime erections. All of a sudden it's no longer an issue when they're masturbating. All of a sudden they can perform better with a partner. So there's that element. Of course, when that happens, especially with a partner, the psychological part comes in as well, where then they sometimes get a complex about it. So that's kind of more on the physical side. And then on the emotional side, what I really realized when I first started working with people with erectile dysfunction was they're really in their heads. There's typically some kind of anxiety about like, I gotta like last a long time, or, you know, I gotta, you know, make sure my partner is kind of, you know, having enough time so that they can get their pleasure. And, or it can even be worse. Like, oh my God, I like this person so much. This might be my person, you know, like, I feel so much pressure to like do a good job. And so then they really get out of their body and into their head. And we're kind of working with that. And then a third thing I'll mention, and then I know we'll have to kind of go back to them, but this is the most fascinating one to me. So we talked about the compartmentalizing, and especially people who are socialized as men, you know, are taught to not embrace their emotions. And so the story I shared was there was somebody I knew in Chicago who was exploring polyamory. He was married, they had kids. His wife was like really into it and was like, I can never go back to monogamy. It was his idea originally. So that's interesting. And he found himself having performance issues with these other women that he was going out with. And what we talked about was that he didn't actually want to have sex with people who weren't his wife. He liked hanging out. He liked making out. But it's kind of like he didn't even want to entertain the idea that that could be the case. And I think that's also a thing when you're socialized as a man to kind of be like, you know, I should just want sex all the time. I should just be like a sex machine. My emotions shouldn't matter when it comes to sex. But his penis was telling him something emotionally that he was not otherwise able to tap into. So that, I think our bodies are just so, so wise. And so I think there's that element with erectile dysfunction too, where I'm like, it's not actually dysfunction. It's just communicating a message to you that you don't want to hear.
That sounds like it would be terrifying for most men.
Maybe. He wound up just adjusting. He was okay. But
He also had, he also got help. Can you imagine trying to do it alone?
Right.
When you're sitting alone by yourself.
Right.
And I'm very interested in this because I think that the partners are also affected in physical, emotional, psychological ways when there's a physical dysfunction, right? So there's a lot that happens there. But no, you're right. That's definitely, you know, that's the physical components. That's your root chakra. Then there's the relationship, and that's the sacral chakra. And then there's your heart, and you don't have the emotional connection. And then you're in your head and you've got this list of things that you shouldn't be doing. And then you have this need, this actual thing that you should be expressing, that you'd like to be expressing. I don't actually want to be participating in this, but your throat chakra is all blocked up. No, you nailed it. Like it is not a root chakra, sacral chakra thing. Sexual wellness, true wellness, does appear to be a whole body, whole energy system concept. So that's really interesting. So I think what you're saying is, I mean, in the case of erectile dysfunction, the idea is to like treat the physical, sure, but also like be willing to explore all of the other energetic blocks, the other sort of emotional components that could be standing in the way. And, you know, you can do that with a therapist, and then, you know, finding courage and the strength to have the conversation with a partner if that's something that's needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes people don't understand what my job is. So like, it is kind of the like deeper layers, generally speaking. And not that I won't ever like kind of give the tips and tricks things if people want them or if that's relevant. But I also find that like when we address the deeper layers and the different chakras, that those tips and tricks things kind of take care of themselves because we're just in alignment, you know?
All right. We're going to go back to tips and tricks here in just a minute. So just be prepared. I'm going to circle back around to that because I think people are going to, I think a lot of us listening were like, sorry, tips and tricks, what now? So I'm interested in a long-term fix, but I'm also going to want that short-term thing.
So That's fair.
Just so you know, we're going to circle back.
Right.
Let's talk about low libido. You mentioned that earlier, and I want to talk about that because low libido, I think I tend to think it sits in the sacral chakra, but I have a feeling you're about to let me know that's not the only thing.
It's so not. You guessed
Let's talk about low libido, and let's specifically, maybe it's not different, but let's specifically think about low libido in women.
Yeah. Okay. Love that. So, so many angles to go with this. So there is a physical health component for some people. So some people might have, you know, chronic fatigue. Personally, I've had a lot of like bloating issues where I'm just like, okay, I'm like exhausted and whatever. There could be some food intolerances. There could be like, yeah, autoimmune. So some of that stuff can get in the way. Also, I see this a lot with new moms. There's the hormonal component. Couple aspects of the hormonal component. So after giving birth, your estrogen is like super low, almost similar to menopause in some ways. Additionally, breastfeeding actually kind of chemically hormonally can make your libido lower as well. Then you add on the layers of you don't have as much alone time. You're not sleeping as much. You're probably not getting much alone time, if any, with your partner who you had the baby with. You've now become a milk machine and almost like your body is like physically beholden to another human. If you are breastfeeding, even if you're not, still really the same concept. It's like you're kind of at the beck and call of this little human that you created. And then there can also be an aspect of being like touched out. So especially when there's like multiple kids, whereas you're just like kids are grabbing at me and I'm picking them up and, you know, I'm feeding and doing all these things. And it's just kind of like, I just don't even want anyone to touch me anymore. Just no. Then there's also the layer of emotional processing. So I've had some clients where there's some beliefs there, like they get past childbearing age and they're kind of like, oh, we're old or we're past childbearing. Like, what's the point of sex anymore? And that's just messaging they got growing up. And once they're able to move past that, they're able to kind of engage in sex again. And then there's that emotional compartmentalizing issue too. So those... there's probably more, but that's what I can think of right now.
So I'm interested in touching on sense overload. Somebody who's very susceptible to sensory overload in general. I mean, yeah. I'm not a new mom, but what is your thought about like just the sensory overload of the world with the constant
phones, huge actually.
And internet and noise of like just where you live and office settings and even just bright lights in the grocery store that you get sort of sensed out.
Yep.
And then to try to tap back into your body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if those things are connected.
For sure. So I have a couple thoughts on that. So I identify as an empath, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do. And sometimes when we feel so sensitive to information, one of the things I noticed when I was on, an Eckhart Tolle retreat in November, which was so fun, so his wife, Kim, was doing this like presence through movement thing with us. And I was like so deeply relaxed and she had a microphone on. So I couldn't tell when she left the stage because the speakers are still up front. There's like 300 of us in this room or something. So she comes around and I'm like in a trance state, just like really letting go, which I think is what I'm supposed to be doing. And she comes around and touches me to like give me an adjustment. And I was just like freaked out. And she had the microphone on so like the whole room could hear. And one of the things I realize is that like, it's easier for me as a sensitive person to go inward, to kind of escape inward in a way that it's harder for me to kind of stay equally present with the outside world as my inner experience, because there's sometimes a fear of like the outside world is going to take from me, or, you know, people are going to want to kind of use some of my energy, or people are going to dump on me, or I'm just going to feel all of it so intensely that it's like, let's just retreat in my little turtle shell. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's that aspect, because when you're retreating, when you're going inward, it's really hard to connect. I also think there's just and I think these are related, the nervous system state. So like if you're in fight, flight, freeze, fawn, you know, the high stress sympathetic nervous system stuff, you're not in rest, digest, sex mode. So finding like what is more of like an optimal level of stimulation for you, or, and I do this with couples, this maybe would fall into the tips and tricks category a little bit, or at least like a tactical tool people can use, is to do some kind of transitional activity. So if you've been like go, go, go all day, if you've been, you know, stressed, feeling urgent, anything like that, to maybe do 15 minutes of yoga, or to listen to a guided meditation, or to go for a walk around the block and kind of get back in your body and to kind of decompress, then think about being sexual with your partner, because it's like until you kind of make that nervous system switch, it just is not going to go very well for you.
Well, and the last thing we want is to be associating sexual activity of any kind with stress.
Yes.
The flight or fight. You don't want your body to feel flight or fight and sexual stimulation at the same time, right? Like that is, it's too confusing. Those things aren't technically supposed to go together. That is, you know, that is violence to your nervous system, right? Those are not.
There's some people who do get hornier when they're stressed, but I think it's because they look at sex as a stress relief mechanism.
Yes, as the way to sort of reset. And that I think that's probably pretty common. And
yeah, it's more common though. More common to just be like, I'm stressed. No, thank you.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think that I have one other that I want to talk about. Okay. I know I said, you tell me, but I'm telling you.
Go for it.
Communication, communicating needs, communicating desires, communicating lack of desire.
Yeah.
How can we do that respectfully? How can we, and like, this is a two-parter.
Okay.
How can we both communicate with our partners and then also be open to hearing our partner's needs and desires?
Yes. So I do think it's helpful to have like what I call a meta conversation about some of this with your partner. So when you're not being sexual and you're just having like a nice normal day, to bring up, hey, how do you want sex to be initiated? Or like, if I'm in the mood, you know, what are some ways that I can approach you that are going to kind of be received the best? So I just talked about this with a couple that I'm working with, where the husband, and this is also kind of a biochemical thing. I think that people who are more, testosterone based beings tend to be like a microwave oven where it's just like, just hit start. They're ready to go. Right. Where those of us who have more estrogen in our systems tend to be more of like an oven that needs to be preheated. So having that awareness that, you know, if you're the one who's a microwave and your partner is more of the oven that needs preheating, learning how to preheat them. Like, you're probably going to get more yeses if you learn how to preheat them. And that can come from a discussion. It can also come from your observations, but I just like to make things verbal because they're very, very clear then. And then we don't have to be guessing. So what we had discussed with this couple was, instead of, you know, jumping right into a super passionate kiss because you've been already thinking about it for a bit and you're just like, oh, that'd be so hot right now. And your partner's kind of like, you know, I'm working.
I am literally right chopping carrots right now. Right. What are you doing?
That sounds dangerous. Yeah. Definitely don't do it when they have a sharp knife in their hand. But, you know, so the response was kind of like, oh, well, I think just like a, like small little smooches or like kind of a slower sensual kiss to kind of start. And then we can kind of gradually ramp up over time as I'm getting more into it. So, you know, having the discussion and also learning to read your partner's cues is important, but then it still might be a no, like you're saying. And so what do you do when it's a no? I mean, I kind of counsel people to find ways to say no without rejecting the person, you know? So maybe you say, oh my God, babe, you're so sweet and I love you. I'm just like feeling kind of nauseous right now. Or, you know, I'm just like still in work stress mode. Can we do something relaxing together first and then see how I feel? So that it's not just like a flat out no. It's not like, I don't want to connect with you. It could also be like, you know, I'm not really in sex mode right now, but I would love some cuddles. And so you're still having some intimacy. Maybe it's not, you know, intercourse, but like, that's not the only way to have intimacy.
That feels like a whole nother podcast episode. What is intimacy?
Oh, yeah. You know,
and where are people finding fulfillment in their intimacy?
right?
Both physically and emotionally and right. spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And does that need another person? Can it be alone? Like, I think there's, honestly, I feel like there's a lot to unpack in that one tiny sentence that you just said.
Yeah.
For people, and this is going to just circle right back around.
Okay.
For people who were raised in a way that does promote shame and even the discussion of sex and sexual things. Yeah. How do we start to become comfortable with that? Is it just a practice thing? Is it just like, I'm going to do this for 1 minute. You get 60 seconds of the sexy talk and then I'm done.
Yeah. I do. Part of me does think there's an element of ripping the Band-Aid off. You know, I think of Mel Robbins. She'll kind of talk about like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Where it's like, you just do a countdown in your head and you just like, don't censor yourself. And there's something important about that when it comes to sex, is like not censoring ourselves. And that includes the conversations. So that's part of it. The other thing is, I think people really build it up in their head. Like, oh, I don't want to get into this conversation. It's going to be so uncomfortable. And, you know, I just look at it like, what if it's just like a couple sentences? You know, it doesn't have to be like an hour long, super deep conversation. It could just be like, hey, babe, you know, I was thinking about this one thing that was getting me really hot and bothered. Like, would you ever want to do this? And they might be like, yeah, I'm down. And that's the whole conversation. You know, maybe it leads in a very fun direction after that too. You know, but
or
I think we have
you
to
say, I will not be taking any follow-up questions at this time.
I love that. Right. Like, you could set whatever boundaries and limits you want, keeping in mind your partner will also respond how they want to.
That's right.
Right. So I like that though.
I'm laughing as you were talking about ripping off the Band-Aid. So I went zip lining one time.
Ooh.
And first of all, I'm terrified of heights. So why I thought that was a good idea,
I don't know,
except that I was like, I have to do this thing.
Okay.
And so honestly, the longer I stood there and thought about it,
yep,
the worse it got.
100%.
It, like, I just like started spiraling and like, I don't even know how this works. And like, what if I get stuck in the middle? And what if, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And so when the time came, I mean, I literally just had to like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
And you just go. And it really was awesome.
Oh, that's so cool.
Right. And it turned out just fine. I like enjoyed it. I went again a second time.
Which wow.
Fortunate, because like to get down the first mountain, there were 7 zip lines. So once you got up there, you were committed. But that's kind of my, like, if we can think of it as like, what is something else that we've done that built up that panic?
Right.
And then I always try to remind myself, like, if I got through that other set of uncomfortable sensations, I can get through this set of uncomfortable sensations, right? Trying to.
I like that.
Looking at a time when we had success and knowing, hey, feeling so awkward and scared didn't kill me in the end, right? Like, here
it
I am. I'm still okay.
I think that's a really great point. Those are like great ways to pump yourself up. The other thing I would add is like, there's also a risk to not bringing it up. Like, I think we're so focused sometimes on like, oh my God, if I bring this up, it could like threaten the relationship, or like, what if we have a fight, or what if I like say the wrong thing and like my partner gets so sensitive and it hurt their feelings and then we're more distant. It's like, okay, yes. But like, if you put any thought or effort into it, that probably is not going to happen. And if you don't bring it up and there's some issues in your sex life, that's going to also drive a wedge between you.
I just had like the most instant reframe when you said that, like the risk of not bringing it up.
Really? Yes.
Could be significantly worse than the risk of bringing it up.
And that's how I view it.
That's brilliant. Not just in sex, but literally in the life.
Yeah.
The risk of not saying what you need or having that conversation or expressing yourself, the risk of not doing that.
Right.
Almost always outweighs the risk of doing it.
Agree. Right.
Because again, like you said, if you're thoughtful and you're kind, and hopefully you are with a partner.
Yep.
Then you already have some groundwork there. There is already, for the most part, a built-in sort of safety net.
Right.
That was a Brilliant reframe. That's so helpful in a lot of ways. Oh my gosh. Isn't it funny how like the tiniest little things you're just like, hold on, why did I never think of this incredibly simple, straightforward, obvious thing before?
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think just because the work I do too, it's like I'm mostly working with people who do have a harder time bringing some things up. And I do see that it's kind of like, well, this is why you're here. This is why you kind of have this issue to begin with, because you're not bringing anything up.
Well, and as far as, you know, the people that come to you, they do build in a little bit of that help for themselves because they have a third party.
Well, yeah, for sure. Right. And I'm happy to be there and kind of be like, all right, we're going to face this together. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to help you do it in a way that, you know, feels even less risky. Yes.
So that's your job. You said sometimes people don't know what your job is, but that is what your job is, to help people get through these difficult conversations or challenging self-realizations with some compassion and kindness, which we can always do and offer to ourselves. But if we need a little extra help, then it's having somebody. I mean, I think we sometimes like use our friends in this way, but you're a disinterested third party, right? Like,
I mean, I'm very interested, but I have no personal stake.
That's
You know, I don't like hang out with them regularly as a couple or as an individual. Yeah, it's different.
And I have a sense like it's like a therapist or a doctor, right? They have seen it all. You cannot surprise them.
Oh, yeah. Like I would, I mean, if someone could shock me, I would actually enjoy it, I think, because I would be so impressed.
you're out there looking for people to like surprise you.
Yeah. But I'm like, if someone can surprise me, that would be really amazing.
I think that's really important to note too. And like, so that's because that sort of takes away that judgment. Like, I don't want to voice this, but I'll tell you because this is probably not the first time you've heard it. And it's probably not. To me, it feels strange, but to you, it feels like, oh yeah, actually that's really
right.
And that's such like a nice perspective.
Yeah. And I do think that's one of the benefits for people too, is like just almost like adopting or witnessing my perspective and kind of being like, oh, that seems like that would feel better. Let me try on Heather's perspective, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if you're constantly judging yourself for being like a weirdo.
Right.
And then somebody with like expertise is like, that's very, very normal. You fall into 60% of people, like,
or even
that
if it's
want
like
that
1%, it's like,
but well, that's the thing.
It's still millions of people, and also, who cares?
indeed.
Right. Yeah.
So you're an original. Awesome. Amazing.
Right. Cool. So, let's explore it. Yeah.
All right. Real quick, tips and tricks. What you got? I told you I was coming back. Tips and tricks.
I know, it's tough. So do we have any specific areas you want tips and tricks in, or just in general?
So I think in general, I feel like we've gotten a couple already. Like one is like, just rip that sex Band-Aid off.
Oh, 100%.
Rip it right off.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great tip and trick.
Good one. I'm thinking part of it is going to involve communication. I'm like, I just like can't get away from the emotional parts of it a little bit. But finding out how to initiate, I think, is really important. And so the research on it is that most people want sex to be initiated physically. Again, have a conversation, ask your partner, because some are like, no, I want it to be verbal so I can like mentally prepare or something like that, or get myself in the right nervous system mode. And I think kissing on the neck was the number one way for sex to be initiated. So that could be something to try if you haven't been trying it, or if you've been struggling in that area. Trying to think what else would be.
Let me ask you, I've got a question. If you are, so you're initiating by kissing on the neck.
Sure.
What if you're the person on the kissy end?
Yeah.
And your instinct is to be like, no. What are some, what is there a tip to get over that hurdle?
Okay. That's actually sort of really
like
good a long question.
Term, like, I know, I understand, like, let's do the long-term work, but in that moment, if we're actively saying, how can I not knee-jerk no all the time?
So if that happened, our partner kissed me on the neck and I had a knee-jerk, like almost like pulling away, I would be like, oh, I'm sorry. I totally realized I just pulled away and you were like trying to be cute. So I think I would just acknowledge that, like, hey, you were trying to connect. And then I would probably be like, okay, I do want to connect, but clearly I'm a little bit feeling sensitive in terms of my nervous system right now. Can we like go on a walk together first? Or can we just do like a little bit of massages first? And then I think I'll be good.
Or even just, now that it's not a surprise, let's have a do-over.
And I like do-overs. I'm a big fan of do-overs.
Just be like, oh, now I know it's coming. Hold on. I'm going to go back. and we're going to do this again, right? Because I think we get like, oh no, if it doesn't happen right the first time, then it's just done, right?
You know, like, that's a really good point, because one of the things that gets people stuck, especially couples that I work with, is like, they're afraid things will be awkward. And I kind of feel like, so what? What if it's awkward? Like, and I also think that's part of intimacy. And I think that's where the do-overs fall in, where it's like, oh, well, that's not like smooth or cool or whatever, if we have to do like a do-over. And I just would say like, so what? Do it anyway. Feel the awkwardness and move through it.
Right. Literally like take two, because we're all like, oh, my sex life doesn't look like the movies. Well, the movies don't look like the movies either. They do those scenes a million times. And I'm talking about like adult films. I'm just talking about like regular movies.
That could be a whole other episode as well.
Like, let's have a little do-over. Oh, hold on. I wasn't ready for that take. Let's start over.
Exactly. Like, what do the movies get wrong about sex? Most things.
I'm going to guess everything.
Yeah, right.
Or
right.
At least it's a good portion.
They completely forgot about the clitoris, you know, generally speaking, it's just all about like penetration, and then everyone like magically orgasms at the same time. And it's just like ridiculous.
And everybody's super happy about it.
Right.
Heather, I do feel like we've now identified like six other podcast episodes. So there's true. That.
We have.
But I've really, really enjoyed this conversation, and
me too. Thank
I will
you.
Say I expected to feel extremely awkward and uncomfortable, and I didn't. You really do create a nice safe space, and I'm sure that your clients appreciate that about you.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
I appreciate you saying that.
Do you have a website? Anything that we can go look at your work?
Yeah.
What are your
I mean, I would say the podcast.
What you got?
So my podcast is called Ask a Sex Therapist. You can find it anywhere that podcasts are available. And I do have specific episodes dedicated to some of the things we talked about today. So there is a libido episode, there is the all about erections episode, there is, I think episode 2 is the real reason you're not talking about sex. So all of these are addressed like a little bit more in depth in some of those episodes. And then I also have a freebie for people about libido. So if people want to just kind of get started on like what the F is going on with my libido, and like, why is it gone and how do I fix it? Because it was something where before getting into doing this work, I didn't know the answer to that either. You know, like if you kind of have lost attraction for your partner or something's going on, and it's kind of like, okay, this is kind of, you know, a buzzkill in our relationship. Like, I don't even know what to do about it. This will at least get you started, right? It's a complex issue, as we've established. It involves all the chakras. It's very holistic, but this will at least help you to start to wrap your head around it. So it's called Mojo Magic. And if they go to my website, which is just my name, heathershannon.co/freebies, there's actually a bunch of freebies on there, but the Mojo Magic one is on there as well. So they can check that out.
Okay. I'll get that from you, and I will be sure that it's in the show notes so that we can take care of it. Anyway, thank you so much for your time,
Sarah,
and your expertise today. I say this every time, but I feel like every time I have a new guest, I learn so much about myself and the world. And this has been no different. I just appreciate your time and your energy today.
I agree. I appreciate yours as well. And I feel like it's been such a good fit. And I think your energetic awareness and, you know, the chakra system and energy in general just like really fit so well with this topic too.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Bye, everybody. Bye.